Hello and welcome to OT Cybersecurity in Focus, protecting critical infrastructure today. I'm Kara, I'm glad you're here and appreciate you sharing your time with us. Today is part three in the series with Jacobs and Hillstrong Group Security. We have Roger Hill from here at Hillstrong, and from Jacobs we have Gabriel Agarucci and Daniel Crane. Again, thanks for being here. Hope you enjoy.
Hey, thanks Kara. And thank you, everyone, for attending. Hopefully, everyone's going to get some value out of today's discussion. So I'm looking forward to this, guys, because we each had a webinar in the past with both Gabriel and Dan. And this time, we get to put our minds together. So, I really anticipate some really interesting conversations. Maybe for those that maybe don't know you, you guys want to do a quick introduction?
Sure. I can go ahead and start off.
Sure.
After you.
Hi, everybody. My name is Gabriel Agbarucci. I'm the executive director for OT and cybersecurity here at Jacobs. Very much so responsible for a lot of our strategy and our consulting business and really just progressing Jacobs into OT cybersecurity here for critical infrastructure environments. So very happy to be here, and I'll pass it over to Dan.
Absolutely. Hello again, everyone. I'm Dan Crane. I lead the cybersecurity and consulting function here at Jacobs. So as Gabriel sets my strategy, then we go out and we execute and we help everyone with their needs in critical infrastructure.
Oh, that's great. So guys, I think to kick things off, we've had somewhat of a theme about water and wastewater. And we can stick within that theme and branch out as necessary. I love the freeform conversation. So to kick things off, I was kind of thinking about what if we just take a state of the state? And what I mean by that is when we look at the water sector today, it's really interesting in the U.S. anyway. When we look at especially the regulatory side, right? We had early regulations coming out with EPA. Then there was kind of a pause as there were some cases brought before the courts of feeling like there was some federal overreach and the EPA regulations being withdrawn. But now to counter that, we are seeing some early states taking some proactive measures. So maybe just for everyone's benefit, just let's have a chat about what does this mean for a lot of the utilities out there?
Absolutely. I think one thing that we've seen, like, as you mentioned, you know, the EPA and AWWA, they come out with these, you know, the risk and resilience assessments, right? That was a service that a lot of that we performed for OT Cyber for a lot of our water and wastewater customers. But you're also seeing states starting to emerge in implementing cybersecurity guidance for statewide water and wastewater resources, such as the state of New York. They're coming out with a notice of proposed rulemaking for their wastewater organizations, and they're having cybersecurity rules that are coming out that they have to implement by the end of 2027. I mean, normal cybersecurity assessments, incident response planning, having a notice or an understanding of where their vulnerabilities are and assets are. You know, this is a leader, right, within the nation. And I think that this will only cause shockwaves across other states and other industries within the water sector, where we're seeing some of this emerge as a result of some of the EPA guidance. So I don't know. What else do you guys think?
Yeah. So the interesting thing to me with New York State and some of the vulnerability assessments and management out of Maryland and even my home state, Ohio, no regulation yet, but we are seeing where every municipality is required to have a cybersecurity incident response plan. So if your municipality produces water or treats wastewater, we're starting to see this convergence. And the interesting thing to me is, you know, if we look even at our conferences, right, you've got our AWWA on one side and maybe WEF on the other, is this convergence of, hey, we all have this critical job we do in water, whether it's providing safe water for people to drink or treating it so that it's safe to release back to the environment. It's to me, it's very nice to see that we're kind of starting to see everybody get treated on the same playing field, that these are both really critical services.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing that strikes me, guys, there's if we were to look at maybe some common themes across some of the states right now, I'll get your read on this and tell me if you think I'm full of it or not. But I think there's two different parallels or foundations right there. One is typically around the incident response side, more around the plan or the process, and the other around vulnerability management or program in place. Right. The one thing that occurs to me on both of that is as that's program elements. Right. It's kind of part of your governance program. We're not even focusing on the technology side, where technology is usually the focus in every conference and in everything we see.
Yeah.
What are your guys' take on that?
Yeah, I guess I'll start this one. Mm-hmm. For those of us that spend all day long talking about cybersecurity, we'll note that these are both elements of SANS top five. So clearly there's been some influence here. Mm-hmm. It's nice to see the governance. Technology is challenging. Going into a utility and saying, hey, you need to spend $500,000 to upgrade your SCADA system is maybe not financially viable at all, but we've also got to start with some amount of governance, right? Like, we've had discussions in the past and offline, right? Like, some people may disagree with this, but you don't know what you're protecting until you know what you're protecting. Mm-hmm. So,
what do you think? Gabe, do you have some thoughts?
I think additionally, we're seeing within the OT cybersecurity landscape, right? With the recent acquisition of Nozomi Networks by Mitsubishi Electric, like that's, we're seeing that organizations are making billion-dollar bets on OT cybersecurity, right? And I think that within a lot of our customer water sector base, we're seeing a lot of implementations of these IDSs, whether Nozomi, whether Clarity, whether Dragos or something else. So I think that from the technology perspective, we're seeing that, but I know that Dan has been working a lot within AI and data centers and how that supports a lot of that type of business and technology advancement. I'm not even going to act like I know all of what Dan has been doing in that space, but utilizing artificial intelligence for predictive maintenance and those type of pieces within engineering is something that's also starting to bridge more over into cyber, where I think that OT, we're already several years behind things. I mean, even the adoption of virtualization and cloud technology, that's still behind. So I think that although the technology is advancing with that of AI and intelligence type of technologies, I still do think that a lot within water is still kind of bread and butter, right? And very, I guess, compared to the technology industry, it's still a bit antiquated in our adoption as a whole. At least that's my take on it. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I almost think that there's multiple reasons for that. The first one I'll throw out there is just the state of where the money comes from, right?
Yeah. So
I think generally speaking, it's not a golden rule, but generally speaking, when you're looking at these utilities, they're municipalities and they don't have big budgets.
True.
And talk about the premise of the lowest bid. I think that's usually what wins oftener in these utilities.
Yeah.
You tend to see the technology where the components, the systems definitely try to maximize the life cycle, so to speak.
Right.
That's probably the nice way of saying, these are really legacy systems. So that's one of the challenges. Not to divert too much from your point on the technology, Gabe, but the one thing I would highlight from a people, process, and technology perspective is in these challenged financial environments, the process side is probably the most cost-effective side. You're dedicating time and maybe some resources to build out these governance programs, to taking the time to create these work instructions, create these plans, and that's really, in my opinion, the sign of maturing your position. You know, so when you don't have big budgets, that could be a good area to focus on.
Absolutely. And the knock-on effect, why I'm very much aligned to this, is you're forcing the conversation to happen. You know, very, very briefly, I was at WEF last week and met a lot of wonderful people up there. And as soon as they found out, hey, you're in cybersecurity, we're so glad you're here. Mm-hmm. And all the side conversations that happened, like the evangelism of cybersecurity and OT, it's finally starting to percolate down. So the fact that there's some regulatory assistance coming down from the states to really help open up these conversations is, you know, I'm going to use an example that wasn't related to, I mean, it was definitely a process level thing, but not related to a cyber incident, right? Nobody wants to be the next Flint, Michigan, or really unfortunate event that occurs.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's a great point. And, you know, I think that goes to the conversations I have with clients, right? And I'm sure you guys are having very similar conversations is, yes, prepare yourselves for the regulatory environment. It's going to happen at some point, but don't wait for it. Because if you build the right program today, you're going to be prepared for it. Often the conversations I'm having, right? And I'm sure it's very similar with you guys. It's create a defensible position.
Yeah.
Right. And one of the things I mean by that is, for example, if you've done a risk assessment or a gap assessment, whatever type of assessment you've done, and you've highlighted some of your gaps, mm-hmm. Now you're aware of that. That's a challenge.
Yeah.
So now you have to create a defensible position of why we chose as a business not to invest in that remediation. And as long as we have a defensible position and we're doing what's best for our system and we're making those right informed decisions, that's what counts.
Roger, that's very notable, because we're even noticing, so within different industries, right, whether oil and gas or manufacturing, a lot of these organizations, critical infrastructure organizations, they're more amenable to that of those proactive, those risk assessment type of services like penetration testing and red teaming, where years and years ago, you'll never see that within water and wastewater. Yeah. Now we're doing these type of services. Dan's team is doing these type of services across the board for water and wastewater organizations. Being able to identify what those risks are, because I mean, we went to a customer and they had one of these risk assessments, penetration tests done, but guess how long it had been? It'd been maybe the last 10, 12 years ago in which they had one of these services. So kind of to the theme of the state of states is that these water and wastewater organizations are becoming more open to these proactive services in identifying where those real risks and what those real OT cyber gaps are. And that's another thing that we've been seeing more and more.
Yeah. Dan, do you have anything? You mind if I could go ahead and pivot this just a little bit?
No,
I
did want,
Gabriel opened a door, and I just got to go through that door because it's such an interesting door.
Let's go through
it. Right? You know, so the whole AI game, it's changed so much in the last, year, 18 months, right?
Yeah.
You know, I look at X, and I like to state that every week or 2 weeks, it's almost like a recap of the latest hype curve in terms of AI. It's just absolutely insane. And of course, you know, I think the big update of this week is OpenAI with the agent builder, mm-hmm. and how everyone can actually create these workflows now. What does this mean for our world of OT security? And, you know, I think it's really interesting, right? So I'm going to go ahead and do a plug here, guys. I normally don't do this, but I have an upcoming talk at ICS Cybersecurity Conference where I'm taking a different angle. And I'm still working on the talk right now. But the essence is, you know how we have always had the conversation around the aging workforce in OT security? Mm-hmm. I think this is so true in water. Often what I see within that water sector is you have a SCADA engineer, or you have somebody who's just been there 30 years. They know the systems inside and out. And this is what I call the tribal knowledge, because they haven't documented any of these work instructions. They haven't documented what, and the biggest business risk I see when I do assessments of these organizations is these individuals. If, God forbid, if they were hit by a bus or if they win the lottery, right? That's a real negative impact on that business. Yeah. So one of the things that I'm looking at, I think is really interesting, is looking at this aging workforce meets knowledge graph meets AI, and how you can leverage, how we can leverage AI in a way to start capturing some of the knowledge transfer to ease this transition. I'm not going to give away any more than that. But
wait, Roger, you're saying cloning the tribal knowledge? Well, I guess
replicating. It's not the Matrix. It's not I Know Kung Fu.
This is what it's not. It's replicating the tribal knowledge of the gentleman who might be 1 or 2 years outside of retirement in order to sustain the operations capture.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll pass it to Dan.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And I see, I mean, that is interesting. And then there's also this multifaceted asset. So, you know, another kind of quick little story where we're seeing this in other parts of industry where maybe I'll say infamously, if we look at Verizon and their business model and their updates and try, you know, we need to do stuff with AI. We need to stay relevant to the industry. So it's all the talk about open AI and the large language models. And so Verizon had a consultant come in and they made a small language model, along the lines of what we're talking about, that was supposed to be for the chatbots. And I'll leave it as an exercise to the listener to go look at what the public reaction to that was. This is the most exciting part to me, is we've got these big general models and we're starting to see the specialization where we're really training it to get this technical data and understand more of this concept. And you can start throwing around generative and AI and agentic and other descriptors on there. In the direct impact also, which is sorry to bring this slightly out of left field, but as Gabe has alluded to, I'm working a lot within the data center community lately. The water usage to keep these AI data centers. So not only is this a good thing for us, but we have this interrelation, right, where it may be this necessary service for us to get this tribal knowledge transfer. I know we do utility. Yeah. Their entire senior leadership team is retiring in the next 2 years.
Yes.
But then also, if you go plop a 2,400 megawatt data center nearby, what is the, you know, what's the potable water usage that they're going to need for cooling of their GPUs? And then what's the potential load going to be on your wastewater system?
It's so interesting, again, because we keep looking at that from the power consumption angle. We don't think about the water. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Let me throw something else out there. You know, what are some of the ancillary type AI uses that we see hitting our space? You know, I think right now, when we look at the large OEMs, right, all the industrial automation vendors, they're all pushing what I would call iterative AI solutions, right? But it is encroaching into our world, right? Mm-hmm. We're already seeing this from a controls engineering perspective with some of the languages for being able to develop our PLC programs and SCADA, HMI. It's definitely getting very pervasive. But I think there's many different angles to this. But one of the things that I would state is, so I'm a big fan of agentic red, because I think that being able to narrow down what you're querying for that large language model or smaller one, to your point, Dan, that way, that is the best methodology to reducing some of the hallucination. Now, in our world where things are very somewhat static, it's the same communication partners, same peers, right? So, you know, from that Greg, the electrician that's been there forever, right? And that knows exactly how to get that up and going. Why does Greg know that? Because he's done it dozens of times, mm-hmm. right? So if we can start to capture these within like an agentic RAG and create like our knowledge graph, you know, from a preventive, maybe predictive, but at least on the preventive side, here's the part I want to bring up. And this is connected to the aging workforce. If we think about the little bit of younger engineers we're getting coming in, I think about the younger generation that are growing up with AI. It's fantastic, right? But here, I'm going to address something. I think it's the people that are in my age bracket that actually have an advantage right now. Because when we think of human in the loop, being able to glance very quickly at the AI output, our experience tells us that's 95% fantastic. 5%, I don't know what the heck you can. That's definitely a hallucination, right? But
yeah,
I think that tends to be a little bit more binary if you do not have the experience to judge what is good and what isn't in that human in the loop. Mm-hmm. And in that scenario, and this is what my concern is, I want to turn it over to you guys, right? Because mm-hmm. I'm going to bring up a reference to one of my favorite movies. But I feel like we're on a journey where we're not going to be exercising certain parts of our minds because we may not need to as much. And especially that younger generation that doesn't have that human in the loop connection there. What happens? Are we on a path to my favorite movie, Idiocracy?
I would say, so a slight change to some of that about the younger generation.
Sure.
I actually see AI and large language models as an opportunity for that group of individuals, because there were times when I knew that even when I was just studying cybersecurity, going from electrical engineering to cybersecurity and networking, there were knowledge gaps that I had that I had to go and seek the information in silos and Reddit posts. And I had to talk to the engineer down the street or that contractor. Now it's all right there in front of them as it concerns the younger generation. So I think that in AI, the AI tutor for controlled system environments, I think that they can really help to bridge that knowledge. Now, of course, as you mentioned, the experience isn't there, but the information is so readily available. I mean, I remember the time in which my mom bought us encyclopedias, right? That was a thing, right? Encyclopedias to reference information. So I think that with the younger generation of next years or next generations practitioners, they have an opportunity to be able to close some of that knowledge gap with AI so that they can expedite their growth to that more senior individual. But of course, it has to be a mindset for sure and a motivation.
It's a great point. I'll definitely concede that point to you, Gabriel. The access and availability of information is like nothing we've ever seen before. Right. I suppose a year or two from now, my concerns might not even be valid anymore. Mm-hmm. In terms of the hallucinations, you know, we have to work through that. Yeah. But that's a very real problem where we are today. So my only concern is somebody reading something and then, okay, in what I'm being trained on, is this 100% accurate and factual?
That's where that experience comes
from. But your point is so relevant because, okay, maybe bring it down to home, right? If I have a problem with my washing machine, I no longer go on YouTube.
No.
I go on a chat GPT for troubleshooting, and no matter what the problem is, and that's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so Gabe really got to, I think the language I like to use is get asked to give advisory input to AI councils for for different organizations is, maybe I'm wrong, and I'm perfectly willing for everybody to call me out on this one as well, but I see this as it's a force multiplier. Mm-hmm. I don't see it as a workforce replacement as much. I think that's the fear-mongering. I'm going to go ahead and call it fear-mongering going around right now. And there may be some jobs that, yes, we can just fully run with nothing but, models and computers processing it. But as we get to this, to that human in the loop, so 95% of that knowledge is there, right? We've managed to pull it out of Greg's head. in electrical. We managed to pull out a bobsled on the treatment process side.
Yeah.
What does the training regime then look like for our incoming operators and our upcoming engineers for them to develop that instinctual human in the loop? This doesn't look right.
Yeah.
How do you get to that individual with experience that you were speaking about, Roger? How do you get there?
That's the trick.
It'll look different. Yeah.
No, I totally agree. That's the trick. And I think, Dan, I think you bring up a really good point. 6 months ago, I'm losing track of time. Maybe it was longer, but I was definitely looking at some of the advancements in terms of the replacement theory, right? I've definitely morphed into, not replacement, force multiplier. Mm-hmm. The tool sets of where they are today and where they're going, they're designed to make me uber efficient and effective, much more so. And not just in my work life, but in my personal life and everything else, right? So it's not necessarily a replacement, but being a force multiplier. That's the way I'm kind of looking at some of the tech stack today. But let me throw something out there that's maybe on the other end of the spectrum from an OT security discussion. When we're talking about some of these advancements of these tools, it's only natural that people are going to leverage these tools, because if we have something that is such a clear force multiplier, can you expect any human being that works for you not to leverage some great tool at their disposal?
So then how they get to that experience level, right?
Yeah. So one, that's 100% Gabriel, what I'm driving at. So to me, at the enterprise side, you have got to have an AI position and governance program for your company and control it before it controls you. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think of that?
I don't have anything to add. That was that third facet. I didn't want to get us off on the previous question, but there's the risk. And which models, and especially right now, which models do you trust? How far down the rabbit hole have various people gone into? Who are the stakeholders behind various large AI models? Who may be trying to have influence on there? We've got this race, right, to the mastermind, right? The first company to truly crack this. Well, what happens if somebody steals all of that training data and moves it to a different company? So
yeah, I think that's such a valid point, Dan. So for example, that's one of the things that I focus some of my conversations about. At the organization level, you need to embrace and decide what direction, which large language, which model are you going to go, so you can actually control the situation by having an enterprise plan where you can actually define that your data is not to be used for training, number one. You can have these SLAs in place. And then that's just on the framework side and selection side, but you need to start putting your governance program for AI in there. And then you have to start thinking of some newer technical controls of ensuring some of the PII isn't leaving your facility. So it's more, there's an old saying that, you have to look at a gift horse in the mouth, or there's a cost for every gift, right?
Mm-hmm. Do you think this is, and this is my last point on this, do you think that this is almost emerging as a executive role in AI governance? I don't know, EO at the end somewhere, do you think that it would suggest that as for enterprise organizations or even OT organizations? Do you think it's driving there?
Yes, is the short answer.
Yeah.
Now here's the real question I'll throw right back to you, Gabriel. And this is really what's interesting. When you look at a large Fortune 500 company, right? Often you have a chief risk officer and part of an enterprise risk program that has nothing to do with your information security program, right? And the CISO. They're two completely different organizations. And sometimes there's a little bit of interconnection, but not much, right? And then you have legal and compliance, and then we have our operations side. But when we think about AI governance, it really crosses all of those, right? So you know what it reminds me of? Mm-hmm. OT. So what's unique about OT, right? Well, generally speaking, the budgets are coming from the enterprise side, from the CISO side, 85-90%. What's unique? They don't own the assets on the operation side.
Right.
It falls under operations. So you have these cross silos, lack of communication. So I almost feel like it's very similar to OT. You know, we've talked about a lot of different topics here, guys. Fascinating conversation. But just to kind of wrap this up and put a little bow tie on it, any closing thoughts you have, Gabe, from the state of the state to the state of AI?
I think probably my major one is that critical infrastructure organizations like water, who are traditionally known to be immature in their OT cybersecurity journey, mm-hmm. that now we have their ear. OT cybersecurity has their ear. And also states and governments, municipalities, they're starting to regulate and starting to apply these mm-hmm. within law, a thou shalt. So I think that this is a turning point. Where, you know, all of our critical infrastructure sectors are starting to get more attention. And, you know, maybe it's because of the bad guys. The bad guys have been active in all of them. But I do think this is a good turning point in the maturing of OT cybersecurity within water and wastewater. So very exciting and looking forward to assisting customers and even having more of these discussions moving forward.
Yeah. Love that viewpoint. Dan, how about you? Closing thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. It is. I mean, this conversation really has helped crystallize it for me. I'm, you know, not scared saying we've got storm clouds on the horizon, but I can see the clouds. And maybe these are good rain clouds for the crops. If I torture an idiom enough, I can make it fit the statement there. But we're seeing regulation happening, and we're seeing reasonable attempts at regulation happening. We're seeing this rapid advancement in AI and the transforming the way we work, the way we interact with information is probably even more important. So this is the, you know, we're not futurists sitting here talking. This is happening.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Closing thoughts for myself would be don't wait for the regulation. Be proactive. The good news is you can take some proactive steps by just focusing on the program, building out just the policies and the procedures, capturing the knowledge. These are great places to start, and you're not alone. There's organizations, Jacobs, you can reach out to where you can get partners to help you in that journey. And there's emerging technology that can really help, but yet need to be careful. So guys, this has been a great series. I welcome you back anytime. And for everyone out there, I hope you really got as much out of this as I did. Thank you so much.
Great. Thanks, Roger.
Thanks.
Thanks again for being here and sharing your time with us. Thanks, Roger, Gabe, and Daniel for sharing your insights and for another great webinar. This was a three-part series, so if you haven't seen part one and part two, you can catch those on our website on the on-demand section. Thanks again for being here. If you have questions about Hillstrong or a question that did not get answered, feel free to reach out to me or go to hillstrongsecurity.com. Have a great day. We'll see you next time. Until then, stay resilient.